This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. When you flip a light switch, how much thought do you give to where that electricity comes from? Does it occur to you to wonder just what effort went into getting that energy to you? How would you feel about the possibility of someone else's environment being devastated so that power flowed to you so easily? For 15 years now, a small nonprofit has been trying to get people thinking about such things. Lately, they've been having some significant success. Their ideas are not without controversy. Some in the coal mining field might not care much for their views, but it appears that more and more of us are at least listening to what they have to say, including our lawmakers. So no matter what your views on renewable fuels, clean energy, coal, climate change, or any of the other concerns on this group's agenda, we figure you might want a chance to talk to some of those who call themselves Appalachian Voices. Your opportunity to do just that is coming up right after the news. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. How important is the beauty of our mountains? What would you be willing to do to protect them? Those are two of the basic questions that I expect we will be attempting to address in the hour ahead. And if you have thoughts to offer, we're hoping you will share your voice with us at 888-WMRA-TALK. The group that calls itself Appalachian Voices will also be much of our focus today. We expect to hear in detail what they stand for, what environmental and political changes they are encouraging, and just why they think you should care about their agenda. We purposely did not set up today's guest roster as an in-studio debate, simply a chance to hear from one particular group that is having a significant influence in our region. So if you find yourself disagreeing with anything you hear, you are also welcome to join us at 888-967-2825. Kate Ruth is National Campaign Director for Appalachian Voices. Ms. Ruth, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Nathan Jenkins is Virginia Campaign Director for Appalachian Voices. Mr. Jenkins, welcome.
Thank you very much, Tom. We're happy to be here.
And former journalist Kat McHugh recently signed on as Appalachian Voices Director of Communications. Kat, nice to have you back on the Inside Airwaves.
Thanks, Tom. Hi.
So, who wants to tell us what Appalachian Voices is and why you think someone listening should care about what you do?
Sure. I'll go ahead and tackle
that
one. Yeah, this is Kat. So real quickly, Appalachian Voices we're a regional nonprofit conservation organization. We are sometimes mistaken for a singing group. And while some of our staffers can sing or play guitar, our real talent, actually, is bringing people together to protect the mountains and the forests and the streams and the communities of the Appalachian region. We chose that name, actually, about 15 years ago to really represent the grassroots nature of our work. You know, in many ways, this region has historically been overlooked and underserved, not necessarily overlooked, however by the timber and the coal industry, you know, which have logged and mined this region intensively. They've been extracting the wealth of our natural resources and leaving a lot of communities in poverty. But this region is just beautiful. We all love this region and enjoy fishing, hunting, hiking, and many of us call this region home. The mission, really, then, of Appalachian Voices is to help connect citizens here in Virginia and elsewhere in Appalachia with each other, to amplify those voices to people in the state capitals and in Washington, D.C., these people who make decisions that affect the quality of our life every day.
Is it fair to call you an environmental cause group?
I don't know that I would say that. I being from the mountains, I think that one of the things that Appalachian Voices does is really speak up for mountain people who tend to be a little bit quieter. I'm from a long line of Virginia farmers that were right on the Shenandoah National Park. We've been there for over 200 years, and people just don't speak out. They expect that the government is not harming them in any serious ways, and is generally working in their favor. So we're trying to be a louder voice when we see things that are not necessarily viscerally obvious to understand, like poisoning water and things like that. that they may not know for themselves. And so we're trying to speak up for them. And generally, I think that we're just trying to benefit the health and prosperity of the people who live in these regions.
But Nathan Jenkins, the big cause that your organization has been involved with from its inception has been what is commonly referred to as mountaintop removal, the coal recovery technique that began to gain traction in the late 1980s and really speeded up in the early 2000s.
Sure, that is true, but it's usually called surface mining by the coal industry, and typically it has been hidden behind other ridges. So where you have highways, they'll leave one mountain, but then they'll take the five ridges behind it because they really don't want you to see it. It can be very visceral, but they are focusing on making sure that it stays quiet, and they've been very effective at that.
But Kate Ruth, this is, you know, pressing on this degree to which you are an environmental cause organization. Well, let me back up. You grew up in the mountains of western North Carolina in a little town called Cashers, was it?
Yes, absolutely.
Not far from the Georgia border, and fell in love with the mountains at a very young age, but never knew that this mountaintop removal, or as the coal mine companies call it, surface mining, was taking place not all that far from your home.
Absolutely. And that's why I think this isn't just an environmental issue. What we work on in Appalachia is so much a socioeconomic issue. This is an issue of justice. People not having a right to clean water, a right to clean air, to having a good economy that their future generations can thrive in. And so that's so much of what Appalachian Voices is focused on beyond just environmental conservation. We see it as a much larger future for our region.
Well, all three of you deal with this issue every day. It is not the only issue that Appalachian Voices focuses on, but it certainly is a major one, this coal mining technique that sometimes is called surface mining. Explain, one of you, please, what it is and why you think it's so devastating.
Sure, I'll take one.
This is Kate.
Mountaintop removal is a radical form of surface mining that involves the use of explosives to blast the entire top of a mountain, and then mining companies will dump that mountain into the adjacent valleys, burying streams, all to access very thin seams of coal, which are otherwise not recoverable through traditional forms of surface mining. Through this process of dumping this mining waste into the valleys, they create what's called a valley fill, which then leaches poisonous toxic metals into the water, which very much impacts the drinking water supplies for the communities below these mountaintop removal
operations.
Yeah,
I would also say it's definitely a desperate form of coal mining. We've been mining in Virginia since the late 1800s, and the coal seams at that time were 12 feet tall, and you could easily mine them out and have underground mines. But we're down to coal seams that are 18 inches to 36 inches tall. And the only way that they can actually get to these is to blow them off. So, for one, they're employing a lot less people because they have giant machines. And for another, they're just aggregating wealth and they're really removing it from these communities that have enabled it, these companies, to make so much money for so long.
But what I still don't get, Nathan, is if I lived outside of Cashiers, North Carolina, where this is going on, or in Appalachia, Virginia, in southwest in Wise County, where this is going on, what difference it would make to my life if a coal mining company came in and did this to mountains nearby?
I think the major thing that it would do to your life is the thing that you grew up with behind you for your entire life, for your grandparents' life, is no longer there. And also the mountain, the very environment that you grew up in, where you hiked, all these things. So where I grew up, the Shenandoah National Park came in and they took some land in 1930 from the farm that we owned, but I can still hike into that park. These people, they lose their mountains and they're gone forever. And also they're getting these toxic metals that Kate was talking about that flow into their water, the springs that they used for, you know, over a century, that gave them wonderful, delicious drinking water, better than what we have in our bottles here. And now they no longer have that. But it's not always obvious. So all of a sudden they're just a little bit sick, or maybe their children were born with a deformity that doesn't really make sense for the people in that area. So it's a huge deal.
And just to take it back and give you a little sense of the scale we're talking about here, across the region of Appalachia. We're talking about Virginia, West Virginia, Kentucky, and Tennessee, where mountaintop removal is taking place. We've had over 500 mountains destroyed through this practice, over 2,000 miles of streams permanently buried and poisoned. This is having impacts far beyond environmental. The communities that live underneath of these surface mines have increased flooding every spring. Appalachia is an area where we get lots of rainflow in the spring, and it's just known now because of the erosion created by creating a moonscape on what used to be a mountain. You have increased amounts of erosion, horrible flooding, horrible flooding. The blasting from mountaintop removal knocks people's foundations. It removes so much property value. And then the health impacts that Nate was talking about. People that live within communities where mountaintop removal mining is occurring are increasingly more sick, higher rates of cancer, higher rates of lung and kidney disease, life expectancy much shorter. The impacts are far beyond the environmental, and that is what we're most concerned about, is the human risk that is posed through this radical and unnecessary form of mining.
Kate Ruth, campaign director, Nathan Jenkins, Virginia campaign director, and Kat McHugh, communications director, are our guests on Virginia Insight. They hold those titles as staff members for the group Appalachian Voices. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham. And again, the bottom line questions to you who are listening: how important is the beauty of our mountains? What would you be willing to do to protect them? If you have responses to those questions or questions about anything else that you're hearing, we'd be happy to hear from you at 888-WMRA-TALK. In all numbers, that's 888-967-2825. Or you can post to us on Facebook, where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight, as did Robert, who says, outdoor industry association statistics might be useful. According to Robert, and what he is quoting from the OIA, says that outdoor recreation provides 138,000 jobs in Virginia, $13.6 billion in consumer spending, $13.9 billion in wages and salaries, and $923 million in state and local tax revenue. Do those kind of numbers sound familiar to anybody?
Yes. Those sound great. And I think another point about MTR is that once the mountain is gone, there is not an opportunity for that anymore. And obviously, a lot of the coal mining companies say that they're leaving behind this flat level space that we need to develop, but they really don't. I don't know what exactly the percentage is. Kate, you may. On I Love Mountains, they have this data, but Kate can go on.
Yeah, fewer than 89% of mountaintop removal mines have been reclaimed, and of that 11% or so, so much of that reclamation falls short of what we would consider true reclamation. The coal industry is required, after they do this process of mining, to come in and reclaim the land. What that often looks like is spreading a seed grass over this area that has been basically turned into a moonscape, as I explained earlier. This form of grass, this hydroseed, could actually grow on cement. So it's not bringing back a rich topsoil to these areas. It's just creating this tall, straw-like, bright green grass. So it's falls short of what we would consider true reclamation. So,
and even those that
Robert
been...
also said in his post here, I'm sorry I didn't read all of it, quote, protecting our natural treasures is not just good for the soil, it is also what makes it possible for us to live in this wonderful region. And we expect that you listening may have some thoughts about that as well. We're going to hit the break in just a few moments, Nathan, but I understand that there is a rich variety of other issues that your organization is involved in. In the few seconds we have before we get to the break, just give us a hint of what else we're going to be discussing today.
Sure. We had a major victory I guess, 2011 about the Odette coal plant. It was going to be the largest coal plant in Virginia, and that was a huge thing for us. So we won that fight. The coal plant's not going to be built, and that has left a lot of room for us to go into Virginia policy to try and get more renewable energy that is clean
so
and benefits
renewable
us
renewable energy, clean energy debates in both national legislature and state legislatures about what constitutes those kinds of things are all things that Appalachian Voices You're nodding your head.
Yes, absolutely.
So we'll try to get to as much of that as possible, as well as Marianne in Batesville, who's waiting on the line when we continue in just about a minute. We have three guests in the Insight studio, all currently staff members with the nonprofit grassroots organizing group Appalachian Voices. Nathan Jenkins oversees many of the group's Virginia activities. Kate Ruth oversees much of Appalachian Voices' national activities. And Kat McHugh is in charge of getting the word out about what the organization is trying to accomplish. That's probably why they call her the communications director. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. We've got a call coming in from Batesville. Marianne, thanks for being that call. Your question or comment, please.
Well, my comment is we've heard a lot about the possible damage with mountaintop removal to people, but it's also invaluable habitat lost for wildlife. I mean, in this region of Virginia, we've got more salamander species than anywhere else in the world. And once we bury these streams and these and destroy their habitat, we lose so much.
I would entirely. This is Kat. Thank you for the call, Marianne. I would completely agree with your point there, and that is happening in Virginia and elsewhere in the region. That you know, these are ancient mountains, and as Kate mentioned before, the topsoil and the forest structure that is there because of the age of these mountains and everything else in the ecosystem, it makes this region one of the most diverse, biologically rich and diverse regions in the whole world. And part of that lends to why they're so beautiful and why we love them. And that's why it is so heartbreaking to, I have actually stood in a spot that had been mountaintop mined, and I looked down at my feet and it was a moonscape. And the thought that I was standing inside of what was a mountain before, it brought tears to my eyes, and yes, there's an incredible human impact, but there is also this impact on our nature, on the natural world as well. And you know, those are inextricably tied, our quality of life and the natural world. So I really appreciate the caller's comment.
Marianne, thank you so much for taking the time to join us here on Virginia Insight.
Thank you.
Joining us now by phone is a man who spent several years organizing college students on environmental causes during the mid to late 2000s when he was an anthropology student at James Madison University. Today, he has turned that avocation into a full-time job as a Southwest Virginia community organizer for the Sierra Club, Marley Green. Welcome to Virginia Insight.
Thanks for having me, Tom. Hey,
so,
everybody.
Marley, I understand home base for you these days is Wise County, where much of the kind of what our guests say is devastating coal mining techniques, what they call mountaintop removal, has been going on. Tell us what your experience of that has been.
Yeah, that's right. I live in Wise County, where actually between 25 and 30% of the county's landmass has been strip mined or is permitted to be. It's the largest coal-producing county in Virginia, and it's the home of the Clinch and the Powell River watersheds, which together make up the most biologically diverse watershed basin in North America, and part of the Central Appalachian temperate rainforest, the second most biodiverse temperate forest in the world. And and I live up Looney Creek in Inman Holler, just outside of Appalachia. Some kind call it the suburb of Appalachia, one of them. It's an old coal camp, and it was established in the 1890s, early 1900s, when the first big coal boom was happening in Wise County and in Central Appalachia. And I live just downstream from a spot in Inman Holler, where in 2004, a 4-year-old boy named Jeremy Davidson was killed in his sleep by a boulder rolling down off of the strip mine, the mountaintop removal mine, behind his home. And so I live currently under that same strip mine. That boulder came and crushed Jeremy in September 2004 because the coal companies were cutting a road that they weren't permitted to cut on their permit so that they could move coal off of the site a little bit faster. And that's kind of a it's a bit of an extreme situation case, but it's also it's not out of the norm. All the time we're faced with coal companies cutting corners, doing the bare minimum, or sometimes even just fabricating the results of tests, or if no one's looking, they'll cut an extra road, even if it puts people in danger of their lives.
Marley Green, when you say it's not out of the norm, I got to check with you. You're not talking about other 4-year-old children being killed in obvious tragedy.
Right. No, I'm definitely more talking about companies going off permit or just bending the rules to cut corners and putting people in danger. I actually wanted to tell one other story about some folks that I met last week. Actually, we got a hold of a list of folks who've called in complaints to the Department of Mines, Minerals, and Energy that oversees surface mining in Virginia. And we're calling through these folks to see how their dealings with the regulatory agencies have been. And these folks asked if we would come up and talk to them. And so it was Gary and Belvie Mullins. They live up in Hurley, which is in Buckingham County. And so there's six counties in Virginia that produce coal. And Buckingham County is right where West Virginia and Kentucky and Virginia all come together. And they live up there. And it's an old coal mining community. And there'd been a little bit of strip mining back in the 70s, but not a whole lot. And then just about 5 years ago, a company called Tico Coal moved in and started up a 1,500-acre mountaintop removal site behind these folks' homes. And within a year of them working on that mine, Gary and Belvie's water went black and started smelling like sulfur all of a sudden. They've had a well tapped into a spring that they've drunk water from for their family for 100 years. And all of a sudden it went black. And they complained to the coal company, and the coal company said, all right, we'll pay for another one. They dug another well, and that was fine for 6 months, and then it went black and stinky. I went out there the other day, and they turned on the hose for me, and we just couldn't stand it. It smelled so bad, and it was pitch black water. And these folks, their home, their other big complaint was that as soon as the mine started getting close, they were blasting so hard twice a day. They'd set off these blasts that would knock pictures off their walls and crack their block foundation. Gary had been working on fixing up the home and stopped because he wasn't sure about if he could safely put siding around where the electricity came into the house, where the foundation had been cracked, and if everything had been compromised. And so, the coal company offered to settle with him for $2,500 if he would sign his name on the line saying he'd never sue them ever. And he's so far refused. He doesn't have a lot of money to hire a lawyer or to try to go after these guys. But that's kind of the situation. It's a really powerful industry that cuts corners left and right and puts people's lives at risk. So
Marley Green with the Sierra Club, the point that it seems to me that you and your organization, as well as our guests here with Appalachian Voices, have been trying to make is there is a lot that is going on behind the scenes that most of the rest of us don't know about. And I guess it's your belief that if we did know more about, that we would demand some kind of action. What kind of action is it that you want?
Well, for us, that we have an immediate need of needing to stop any new mountaintop removal mines from coming online. It's really, we're hemorrhaging life expectancy, and we're hemorrhaging young people in Appalachia because every mountain that they blow up is a poison community and lost jobs and lost hope. And so people leave. And so we really have a crisis. It's an emergency situation for some of these communities directly impacted by it. And so we, immediately need to stop all new mountaintop removal mines. There's two pieces of legislation in federal Congress that could do that. And we're also asking the EPA to use the abilities that are in their power right now to essentially stop all new mountaintop removal permits. And I hope that the folks from that Voices might be able to speak to that a little bit.
We will ask them in a moment. I need to also make room, Marley, for some other calls. But I understand that you're traveling somewhere near Harrisonburg at the moment on your way home to Appalachia in southwest Virginia. So we want to thank you so much for making time for us. Virginia community organizer for the Sierra Club, Marley Green. We're going to go next to Stanton. This is Benjamin calling in. Benjamin, thanks for reaching us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for our in-studio guests, Nathan Jenkins, Kate Ruth, and or Kat McHugh, please.
Yes, hi. Thank you very much. My concern is that when I hear conversations around things like national energy policy, the thing that I hear here in Southwest Virginia is really is so much about that sort of conventional line of thinking that is very old school, very very conservative, if you will, although I think that's a misnomer, because they aren't conserving anything. and the line is something that something along the lines that that if you oppose coal, you're somehow being unpatriotic, you're opposing the traditional way of Appalachian living, and that you're somehow taking away from the people who need this the most, even though the wealth really in these cases largely goes to the company and they leave behind a wreck. And I would just like to hear your guests in general just give some thoughts to that and try to tease out at least that piece from that sort of Republican conservative line that that opposes any sort of change and lumps this in with everything else.
Okay, Benjamin, we've got your question. Hold on for us. We're going to get a response.
Thank you, Benjamin. This is Kate. You hit on something that's really important. Appalachia is a region that has been rich in coal mining history for over 100 years and something that many people who live within the region have a lot of pride about. It stretches back multiple generations within their family. What we're talking about on the show today, mountaintop removal coal mining, is not that rich history of coal mining. Mountaintop removal coal mining actually removes the coal miner from the equation and replaces that miner with heavy equipment, machinery that's designed to do the work of hundreds of men with one stroke of a bucket digging out coal. And so what we're seeing in Appalachia as a result of mountaintop removal and large-scale surface mining is a huge impact on the available coal mining jobs. During the time period when there was the largest boom in surface mining between the 80s and 90s, so from roughly 83 to 2003, coal employment in Virginia fell by 65%. And that's a direct correlation to an increase in surface mining. Actually, since the Obama administration came into office and started putting more strict regulations around this form of coal mining, and also as coal becomes less recoverable, we're seeing an increase in those coal mining jobs because the companies are being forced to go back to traditional sources. They can't do this devastating practice as easily because, fortunately, the federal agencies have been making it a little bit more difficult. Unfortunately, they're not making it difficult enough, and we are still seeing mountaintop removal permits being issued, more mountains being destroyed, and more miners losing access to jobs. When we think about economic transition in the region and diversification that is so necessary, we need to really start thinking outside of the coal box because we don't have enough recoverable coal left in the region for a place that has relied on that for many, many, many generations.
Benjamin, thank you so very much for your call. Kate Ruth, campaign director, Nathan Jenkins, Virginia campaign director, and Kat McHugh, communications director, are our guests on Virginia Insight today. They hold those titles as part of their staff work for the group Appalachian Voices. If you want to talk to them, we've got a phone line open for you at 888-WMRA-TALK. Benjamin making the point about there being a coal mining culture that's been so celebrated for so long throughout Appalachia, including in Virginia. But I think there's also this argument that the coal industry and maybe other economic interests make, and that is the result of coal mining for decades in this part of the country has been cheap energy. Do they have a point?
This is Kat. That is a very specious kind of argument, very false argument. There are so many costs, external costs, what they call, associated with coal mining, which we
but
have just been talking about.
I asked the question at the mm-hmm. top of the hour about when any of us turn our light switch on, how much thought do we get to what mm-hmm. went into getting that electricity for
right.
us? The one thing many of us think about is when our electricity rates go up. So your organization has for some 15 years now been trying to get the kind of coal coming out of Virginia reduced, the kind of coal mining that you say is so destructive reduced. Let's say you had been successful as of 15 years ago and all of this coal had not been available. Has anybody tried to figure out how much electricity rates would have gone up as a result of that?
So I can jump in here and just say that, again, the type of coal mining we're talking about, mountaintop removal, accounts for a very small percentage of the overall electricity that Americans use. In fact,
but what about here in Virginia?
Here in Virginia, it's around 2.2% of the coal that's produced, and that represents such a small percentage of coal production. We can easily eliminate that with energy efficiency. There's no arguing that. 2.2%.
Next call coming in from Jane, somewhere in Southwest Virginia. Jane, thanks for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment, please.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you. I live in the coal fields of Virginia, so I'm not sure if I wanted to ask a question, but maybe respond to one of yours.
Well, tell us about your experience of living in the coal fields of Southwest Virginia.
Well, I grew up here, and of course, like everyone else, the daughter of a coal miner. Both of my grandfathers were coal miners, and it was a way of life. And that's when there was that coal mining was done underground, the way most people in this country, I think, picture it being done. I moved away as a young woman and lived in the West for some time and returned to the area in the early 80s. And what I saw happening was a new type of coal mining called mountaintop removal. And I went over to one of my favorite passes, a gap in a mountain, and it was gone. The whole mountain was gone, and there was just this vast wasteland as far as the eye could see. And I was like, what is this? It was like nothing I'd ever seen. Since then, about 30% of my county has just been devastated. And this is, we're talking about, I live in the Powell River watershed. And the Powell River and the Clinch River watersheds are the most biodiverse riversheds in North America.
And this is in Wise County?
This is in Wise County, parts of it in Scott County, but it's being destroyed, and we don't see the prosperity here. We're still, as always, among the poorest counties in the whole state.
Jane, what we sometimes hear from people who are in circumstances similar to what you've just described is something along the lines of, I wish the rest of the country could see what we are seeing and what we are experiencing here. Is that something, especially after you've traveled around the country some, that you identify with?
Absolutely. I think that when you hear the coal industry speak about coal, I mean, they act like we're fighting coal. We're fighting this practice of coal mining, which is not creating jobs. Just the opposite, like Kate said, it takes a fraction of the people to mine coal. It's not even mining. It's demolition and excavation.
Jane, thank you so much for sharing some of your experience with us. We've got to go to a break, but we're going to continue here in just a bit more than 1 minute. And Michael from North Carolina is next on the line, then Ron in Harrisonburg. That means we've got at least a couple of lines open. If you there listening want to join this conversation with our guests from Appalachian Voices. Former Roanoke Times environmental reporter Kat McHugh is one of our guests. After leaving the newspaper business, she worked for some years for the Southern Environmental Law Center. Then just the middle of last year, she took on her current post as director of communications for Appalachian Voices. Native Virginian Nathan Jenkins once worked with disabled children, teaching them how to snow and water ski at Big Bear Mountain in California. but most of his professional life has been spent in environmental causes, including several years as executive director of the Rappahannock County Conservation Alliance. These days, he helps coordinate Virginia-based activities for Appalachian Voices. The environment has also been a focus for Kate Ruth throughout her professional life, first with Greenpeace, then the Rainforest Action Network, and for the past 3 years now as National Campaign Director for Appalachian Voices. You get a sense that Appalachian Voices is our focus this hour. If you want to talk with any of our guests, we've got a phone line open at 888-WMRA. Talk. This is Virginia Insight, and my name is Tom Graham. Ron in Harrisonburg, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment, please.
I just wanted to comment that this is a pretty horrific situation that we have going on. And once again, we see examples of, you know, the few getting richer at the expense of the masses. And since our society right now is so concerned about what we're going to leave our children, I mean, this is another perfect example of, you know, our capitalist environment going awry to make the few rich. Having said that, I was not aware of what a serious situation this was, and I've heard, you know, similar things years ago with strip mining out west. Where can we see the public evidence of this? Are there documentaries about it? Is there information on YouTube? Where can we get some, you know, close-up witness of what's going on?
That's a great question. This is Kate here from Appalachian Voices. There's a website, ilovemountains.org. You can go to that website and you can see images, aerial photography of mountaintop removal. You can take a virtual tour through Google Earth. We actually partnered with Google Earth some number of years ago and were named a Google Hero for our work documenting and then providing that imagery to the public. And so I encourage you to go and check out that website. We have videos documenting callers that you've already heard on the phone today, Jane Branham from Wise County, Virginia, as well as links to other documentaries that have been put together by many very talented people in the recent years.
There's also a great tool on that website called What's My Connection, where you can enter your zip code and find out what your utility is using mountaintop removal coal and how much and where. So I would definitely encourage you to see that website. It's a wealth of information.
So it may give you some idea what's going on to bring you the electricity that makes it possible for you to turn your light switch on and
Absolutely.
Where that's coming from. Ron, great question. Thanks so much for joining us. Let's talk about some of the other issues that Appalachian Voices is working on. And I know that you guys don't apparently like calling yourself an environmental organization, but when I look at these lists of causes, it looks to me like they're all pretty much connected to environmental improvement. And certainly renewable energy is one of your big ones?
Certainly, yeah. As I said, after we had the big victory about stopping the biggest coal plant, the 1,500-megawatt coal plant that was going to be built in southeastern Virginia, we had a lot of capacity to work on renewable energy policy in Virginia, and that's a huge issue. So we started the Virginia legislature passed a law in 2007 that would encourage utilities to produce or buy at least a small amount of renewable energy. And this law, unfortunately, after 6 years, has not led to the development of a single wind turbine or solar panel in Virginia. So ironically, actually, it discourages renewable energy growth. So we are also now working with some of our senators and delegates to try and get a renewable energy law that actually brings that really growing industry to Virginia. If you see hundreds of megawatts of solar panels coming into New Jersey and thousands of jobs that creates. And we're losing thousands of jobs in the coal industry. So it just seems like common sense that we would try and bring this really burgeoning growth to Virginia.
And you had some legislation that was proposed in the General Assembly this year. And do I understand correctly, Nathan Jenkins, that Democrats supported it, Republicans, who hold the majority in both houses, voted against?
Yes, there was a partisan vote, and it was broken by Bill Bowling in favor of not having our amendment. And our amendment was only asking that if you, as a utility, were buying renewable energy credits, that they came from wind or solar or these newer forms of electricity rather than 1930s hydroelectric plants, which is really cheap. But our law allows that, and therefore utilities have the incentive to go ahead and buy that cheaper energy.
You have hopes that this is going to change sometime soon? You want people to contact their state legislators? What is on the horizon?
Well, a lot of things are on the horizon. One of the biggest things that, that happened this year was that Dominion actually agreed with us. That's the Dominion Virginia Power, which is the state's largest utility. And they agreed that, that these credits should come from the better sources of energy or the cleaner sources of energy. But unfortunately, we lost that argument and it didn't happen.
Tom, another thing that is on the horizon here. So the utilities in Virginia have to submit what is called their long range plan, an integrated resource plan that describes where they're going to get their energy from going forward.
This is Kat McHugh,
sorry, right. This is Kat. And so Dominion will be submitting that plan sometime this year. Appalachian Voices is part of a coalition in Virginia called the Wise Energy for Virginia Coalition. Ourselves and several other groups. And we are going to be looking at kind of an alternative to this resource plan and looking at how Virginia can potentially meet our energy needs, relying much more on cleaner energy, energy efficiency, as well as renewable sources such as wind and solar that will offer a real counterpoint to what Dominion will likely put forward, which will be very heavy on the traditional sources. So
traditional sources such as?
Such as coal and fossil fuels, essentially, and also.
But isn't there also a debate over what qualifies as renewable energy? I mean, some who say, let's just burn trash. And you guys say, wait a minute, that's not really good for the environment.
Yes, absolutely. Our voluntary renewable energy goals are very small. So it's very easy for our utilities to meet these goals by burning trash or wood waste.
That's considered renewable, but not necessarily clean.
Absolutely not clean. And it certainly doesn't drive the industry that would bring this huge job growth to Virginia. So we think that's a serious problem.
We're going next to somewhere in North Carolina. I don't know exactly where, but Michael has called in. Michael, thanks for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for our Appalachian Voices guests, Kate Ruth, Nathan Jenkins, and or Kat McHugh, please.
Yeah, hi, good afternoon. I'm from Charlotte, North Carolina, but spent 37 years of my life in Columbus, Ohio. That's where I was born and raised. And just my perspective, because I think I'm the kind of person that you don't have support from because, you know, growing up in Central Ohio, there's no mountains, there's no awareness of these kinds of activities. It's pretty flat. we don't have a lot of this kind of thing going on. Now, I've lived in Charlotte for 5 years, so I have a much greater respect for, have access to the mountains. I get to see them more often and all the beauty in the environment that exists. Not that Ohio's not pretty, don't get me wrong, but it's not as pretty as where I'm in this part of the country. But so my comment is, I don't know what's your challenge to get to people like me who I think I fit 5 years ago in the category of, I hear these things, but I don't necessarily care. I mean, I don't see the impact. It's great for me to hear these stories of people who live in these areas and how it affects them, but for the person I was 5-6 years ago, you know, I just think you have so much population in the country that doesn't tend to care. They might hear this on the radio and just flip the channel and say, well, this doesn't affect me. So
Kate Ruth,
I don't understand.
Michael, hold on, please.
Yeah.
I appreciate the caller's comments, and having, you know, gone on the road for Appalachian Voices and talked across the country to audiences about the issue, the connection is a very important one. People can hear these stories and understand that something terrible is going on, but why should it matter in their community that isn't within Central or Southern Appalachia? And the reason is because we are all connected through the legacy we're trying to leave of clean air and clean water for future generations. And also, many of us are directly connected to mountaintop removal through the light switch. Much of our power does come from mining that takes place in Central and Southern Appalachia. And so we draw out those connections for people and tell them exactly how they're connected. And I can say that once you're able to reach the audience and tell the story, not many people can walk away without being impacted by that story. And so I think our challenge, and one reason that we do shows like this and are trying to get the word out, is because we need to reach more people. This needs to be a conversation that's happening around the dinner table. And not just on shows on great, you know, radio stations like this one.
Michael, thank you so much for your call. Kate, I don't know if you or Nathan will have ever heard of this, let alone seen it. Kat and I are sort of the oldsters here, although I'm probably many decades older than Kat. But there are probably people listening who remember that famous television commercial of decades ago about littering, where there was an actor dressed as a Native American looking at the trash along the highways and a single tear dripping down his cheek as he looked at the destruction of the beautiful land. And many sociologists have marked that as a turning point in Americans' attitudes towards tossing trash out of their cars as they traveled along the highway. It seems to me that, although I appreciate what Michael is saying, that if he lived in Ohio, he might not care about this. Also, if he lived in Ohio and many places in Virginia and the rest of the country, he probably hasn't heard about this because there has been no equivalent to that Native American by the side of the road looking at the trash impact of this issue.
I would just add that my mother's parents were from Ohio, and they have beautiful fields that are typically the striped fields of different crops, and it's just very colorful, and it is hilly. And they also had a lot of oil rigs. When I grew up, I think there was an oil rig on my grandparents' land, and that actually gave them money and wealth. And that,
but Nathan, you and your colleagues here from Appalachian Voices have used the term destruction creating a moonscape, a horrific result from what is happening in what many Americans might call the backwaters of Appalachia, out of sight, out of mind.
Sure.
Is it possible that it's happening not just because people living away from those rural areas don't particularly care about what happens in order to get them their electricity? Is it possible that it's happening because people don't have an awareness of it?
I think it's largely, this is Kat, I think it's largely that last part of what you mentioned, and that is clearly one of Appalachian Voice's key missions, is to bring about an awareness throughout the country about what is happening in this iconic region of Appalachia. I often think about the fight over the Alaska National Wildlife Refuge. Well, I've never been there. But I care about that place, and that place has risen to the stature of a cause célèbre, if you will, in the national debate around energy. Appalachia is the same. We just are, you know, we're still really working hard to bring it up to that level. And there are a lot of, we mentioned before, some of the movies and documentaries and video clips. And I think once people find those on that website, on YouTube generally, and see this for themselves, and mostly hear from the people like Jane, who have lived in this and have experienced the impacts of it, it will become real to them. And, you know, we all should care about all parts of our country. There should be no sacrifice zone.
We're going to run short on time here, but we do have Sandy holding on from Mount Sydney. So, Sandy, please, if you could ask your question or make your comment fairly quickly, that'd be a help. Are you there, Sandy? Well, it looks like we've lost Sandy. Well, I think then that's going to make room for us to go to Lou Ray and Nathan. You're probably going to be our last call. Could you make it quick, please? Well, Nathan, I'm afraid that your cell phone signal is cutting in and out. So I have a note here from when he was talking to one of our producers that part of his question was going to be, in those areas where the moonscape, as Kate was the last to talk about this, has been created, is it possible that wind energy could be used there, that windmills could be built in those areas? Anybody have any ideas?
One thing that's challenging when you remove the top of a mountain is you also bring it down in elevation significantly. One thing in southern West Virginia that community groups were fighting for a long time was a wind project on the Coal River Mountain instead of a mountaintop removal surface mine. If that mountain were to be mined, it would significantly reduce the level of wind that could be accessed there through wind turbines, making it no longer economically feasible to have a wind farm on that mountain as a result of the mountaintop removal. What we're increasingly looking at are opportunities to bring in solar and other types of renewables. However, there's so little funding for this that we really are looking for programs where we can bring more renewable energy as a form of reclamation to these sites. And there are cases where it's happening. There are some startup wind projects and solar projects happening. Sustainable Williamson is an excellent example of that.
We're again, just about out of time. Occasionally, some of our listeners are going to run into their state or federal lawmakers. Congress often holds Congress people, hold town halls across Virginia where they meet with constituents. In 10 or 15 seconds, Kate, if somebody was to say something to such a legislator, what would you want them to say?
Thanks, Tom. Federally, we're working on a piece of legislation, the Clean Water Protection Act, and I would just ask listeners, if you have an opportunity to call your members of Congress, please ask them to support this important piece of legislation, which is we have been working on for many years now and is backed across both party lines. Again, that's the Clean Water Protection Act.
And people can find out more about that at your website,
yes,
which I'm going to tell them about in just
great
a moment. Our guests have been Kate Ruth, Kat McHugh, and Nathan Jenkins, all staff members with the Environmental Conservation and Grassroots Organizing Group that calls itself Appalachian Voices. Thanks, Kate, for making time for us.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks, Tom.
You can find audio postings of Virginia Insight by going online to WMRA.org, then clicking on programs, and then clicking on Virginia Insight. And when you go to that page, you will find links to more information about our guests and about Appalachian Voices. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more Insight.